Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. This is The Speakeasy with Damon Olte.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Jack caught me in the studio with my guitar and he forced me to play. And what a nice day to be in the studio playing guitar. It's sunshiny here in Brooklyn. It's got me thinking a lot about the spring coming up and the summer. And a chance to get to hang out with my good buddy Nick Jarrett, who moved to New Orleans this winter. And yeah, can't wait to see him. But right now we're going to check in with him and see what he's been up to. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
What's up, Damon? How you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. Just sitting here drinking a beer, ready to talk shop with you, man. How you been?
I'm doing all right, man. Doing all right. Just had a bunch of folks down from Brooklyn the past couple of days, was showing them the New Orleans experience.
Awesome.
The weather down here is about, 75. Palm trees are all beautiful. So,
Yeah.
In that regard, it does not suck. It does
absolutely
not suck.
Absolutely. So you moved down in, what, November or October?
I actually moved down right with Tales of the Cocktail.
Oh, that's right, right, right. So, I remember that.
Been since July at this point. I mean, I figured, kill two birds with one stone.
It seems like it wasn't that long ago, actually, but I guess it has been the summertime.
Time flies, right? How time flies.
Yeah, absolutely. So what were some of your reasons for moving to New Orleans from New York?
Well, don't get me wrong. I love Brooklyn and I love New York, and it's quite possible that I'll end up back there. But I figured I wanted to put in another year in a different city. And New Orleans has always struck me as a fascinating city as far as both musical culture, drinking culture, just really unique in the U.S.
Yeah.
So, putting a little time in, enjoying it. It's a wild ride. It's a wild ride.
Actually, it's one of the more influential cities for classic cocktails, as it were.
Massively. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it was always the harbor towns. New York, of course, had a massive impact, but the Port of New Orleans is at this point the biggest in the country. You still have sort of a residual accent down here that's called the Yat accent, which is almost identical to, Boston, New York, New Jersey. Same kind of Irish-Italian, background. So early on, it was a melting pot, and they drank heavily from day one.
Well, you haven't quite gotten that accent yet. And I was kind of hoping I would hear a little bit of that coming through, but I guess it hasn't been long enough.
No. I doubt, I'm too old to teach this dog that new trick. But, massively influential down here as far as cocktails go. Obviously, you have the Sazerac. I'd walk by the strange cafe where that was invented almost every day. So, there's quite a bit of drinking history down here.
Yeah. So where are you working these days?
I'm currently spending my time uptown at Cure, a cocktail bar run by Neil Bodenheimer and Kirk Estopinal. That one's up for the James Beard shortlist this year. Or, sorry, the James Beard nominees.
Congrats.
And then, another little bar called The Same, which is kind of a grimier metal dive bar, dance venue, show place. Keep my highs and my lows, right? Highs and lows.
That's awesome. Yeah, you got to have the balance in life. I do remember the last time I was at the Saints. I can barely remember it, but I do remember being there, and it was exactly as you put it. Kind of grimy rock and roll place. I remember it was for Tales of the Cocktail, and I remember being in the kind of backyard patio area, and the place was packed. I believe it was a slow and low party.
Slow and low party. That was a disaster, wasn't it?
It was so
finest kind.
Yeah, it was so fucking hot, and there were these giant tubs of ice down beer. And I just remember everyone at one point not even caring about their beer anymore, just shoving their arms and heads into the big ice bin to cool down. I was one of them. I might have started that actually. I don't know. Probably not, though.
That sounds like par for course there. I mean, it's a well-regarded bar. It's got an interesting background. I mean, it's been operating as a liquor license since, you know, time immemorial, more or less. Dark period in the 70s and 80s when the neighborhood was a little bit more dangerous. But we have a lot of shows. Quentin Tarantino is a huge fan of the bar. He's quite the regular there while he was filming Django Unchained down here. He's in about every day. It's interesting. And then, you know, Cure on the High End is a great cocktail program with a very unique program. I mean, you know, people like us, we see a lot of recipes from a lot of different bars. Mm-hmm. You can recognize a Cure recipe by, you know, elements in its design, proportion and breakdown and build.
And what are some of those?
It's a unique bar.
What are some of those, some of the, like you said, like the proportion and the recipe breakdown, what makes that unique to some of the other bars around?
Well, I'm sure you're familiar with Beta and Rogue Cocktails, those two recipe books that came out a number of years back from mm-hmm. Maxim Pizzuniak and Kirk Estopinal. Mm-hmm. So the house has a certain style. It's a lot more emphasis on salt, aggressive use of bitters, different forms of citrus handling as well. A lot of seasoning and preparing glasses or using multiple twists to get additional citrus oil on. Like so, you know, little touchstones. It's essentially the basic spec build. It's based in, like, the Violet Hour milk and honey tradition, but deviated quite a bit when it opened up down here.
And when you say multiple citrus peel, do you mean, like, actual, like, different, like, multiple types of citrus that you're using as the garnish, or, like, using more than one or, like, a bigger peel?
Differing amounts and different types. So layered aromatic builds. In some cases, going for more oil than you would get from any one, or a layer of different options, which is, I mean, it's around and about, but there's more use of it down here, I would say.
Yeah. I've always been a big fan of, you know, using like a horse's neck peel, you know, like a longer
sure.
peel, so you can get more oil. You know, I mean, especially with certain types of, like when you're thinking about the body of a cocktail, and, you know, using different types of sugar or even more or less sugar to, like, build a richness. Especially, like, even when you think about, like, different wines, especially things like, you know, Rieslings and things like that have, like, kind of a more oily kind of mouthfeel.
Yep.
I think that's really interesting for a cocktail, especially when you're, like you said, you're using bitters pretty aggressively. So that should, like, kind of build a different kind of, like, always think about the foundation, but then that, all that stuff's, like, sitting right at the top of the cocktail, so, like, every time you take a sip, you're getting some of that oil. So I think it's a pretty cool idea.
Exactly, exactly. Or even, you know, just preparations like the Sazerac stuff. Sazerac obviously influences a huge number of cocktails. And that's one of the sort of very specific build preparations that we retain. If you say a Sazerac cocktail is built Sazerac style, any bartender will have an idea what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Stirred, rocks glass, treated in one way or another. So, it's more that sort of attention to handling. The methodology down here, I think that everything does feel a little bit sweeter in New Orleans. Something about the hot weather and the humidity. I mean, I can
sure.
tell you that I find myself in the weather down here and in the humidity preferring something with a little bit more sugar and body to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Jim Kearns and I always talk about this, you know, about how when we're coming up with cocktails, a lot of times, you're trying to make it have the right flavor profile and the right, like, acidity and sweetness levels and richness to, you know, basically make everyone happy. But we end up kind of, a lot of times, since we both kind of shared a sweet tooth, kind of end up a lot of times making them drier and more tart than we would normally make them for ourselves. But then we always go back to...
Precisely, right?
Yeah. But then we always usually just go back to, like, kind of, like, putting them back to where we started with that certain level of, like, body and sweetness. And I think that's, like, one thing, especially with proprietary cocktails. I mean, let me know if you share this opinion, but I feel like, you know, if it's a proprietary cocktail, obviously it's something new. Maybe it's a riff on something old, but for the most part, it's something new for the guests to enjoy. So it's almost like you should cater to, like, your recipe, right? You know, more than trying
yeah.
to be a variation on something else, because, you know, I mean, obviously with classics like a margarita, people will be like, you know, I want it, like, almost like no sugar, or like maybe just like a dash of agave
sure,
and
sure.
no curacao or anything. But I mean, like, those, you know, they've been around for a while, those kinds of drinks, so you can actually people can take their liberties with them as much as they want, but I think if it's a proprietary cocktail, it's like when someone comes into your bar and orders something that you invented and they say not too sweet, our favorite line of all time to hear. You're like, wait, just try it first. Try it first. You haven't even had it, you know?
I know. It's fantastic down here. One of my favorite recent not too sweet moments. Someone asked what they wanted. They like amaretto sours and Grand Marnier neat.
But not too sweet.
But yeah, with proprietary cocktails and a house cocktail set, like there are, you know, a couple different kinds of bars, and there are a couple different styles of drink presentation and building. I mean, you can tell something if it's coming from, say, Milk and Honey's catalog, mm-hmm. versus Death and Company at certain time periods, versus Cure down here, or the Franklin in Philadelphia. And that house style, or everything within the house, it's sort of a general theme that the bartenders create and the head bartenders create, but is recognizable. It's why you go to one cocktail bar over another, or why you do a cocktail bar differently, because you are going to get a different set of drinks.
Sure.
Well, we share many, I mean, I think most of us share the same general ideas on the foundations of, you know, cocktail recipe construction. There are slight differences, and some people just prefer one ingredient or a certain methodology. They're going to have a slightly different balance of aromatic, aromatized wines to a base spirits. They believe in a different kind of split of liquors. Yeah, that's what we do.
So, on that note, what is the Cure Sazerac spec and build? Can you walk us through it?
Sure, absolutely. The Sazerac, as they do it down here, is a basically bar spoon of Demerara syrup, rich Demerara, 2-1, 14 drops of Peychaud, 2 ounces of Sazerac 6 here, which is everywhere down here. All bitters in Cure are done by drops. Actually, these really lovely sort of bitters dropper tiered like raised. That's cool. Stirred in a dilution and then poured into a chilled glass spritz with Absolut. So very simple. The key difference being mainly that it's Sazerac 60 that they settled on for the house formulation.
Okay. What absinthe are you using? Are you using herb saint, maybe?
The absinthe is Vieux-Pontarlier.
Okay. That sounds...
I do love it, you know, herb saint myself. It's a little too viscous in the bottle, though, for an atomizer.
Right. So, like, to me, that sounds like pretty... I mean, like, it sounds like a pretty classic... You know, Sazerac. I mean, even with the Demerara, you know, that's mm-hmm. obviously going to add richness, especially since you said you're doing 2-1 on your simple. I'm kind of surprised that you guys don't do the muddled sugar cube, but I totally understand why. I mean, like, to me, it's like when you do a muddled sugar cube in an old fashioned or a Sazerac, whether you build it in the glass or you're building it in the mixing glass, it's harder to remain consistent with the sugar that's actually going to find its way
absolutely.
Into the cocktail.
Absolutely. And now listen, Cure happens to be one of those bars where really consistency is one of the main goals. Anywhere we're dealing with bitters by the drop and so forth, consistency is huge. And I think most of the cocktail bars I've worked at, with some exceptions, are really going for consistent product. There is a lot to be said about, you know, sort of the Japanese Zen idea of, you know, cracked pottery, like drinks being a little bit different naturally. And I love sugar cubes and Sazeracs. So you're going to change the recipe in an old-fashioned, so it needs to be a little bit more water and soda water to dissolve the sugar with. But you can go to some very, very respectable old-line restaurants down here. Like, Arnaud's never stopped serving liquor during Prohibition. Mm-hmm. So the bartenders who are there are trained by bartenders who were trained by bartenders who were trained by bartenders who were making cocktails, you know, in the height of, you know, the golden days of mixology. They definitely use sugar cubes there, I believe. And although the rise, as we talked about before, too, the whiskeys have changed. The standard call down here used to be Old Overhaul.
Right.
Very few restaurants and bars are using Old Overhaul anymore just because there has been such a noticeable change in the product.
Absolutely. I mean, like, the last time you were actually in the studio on the show, we were drinking some of...
we were speaking about.
Yeah, here, bottled and bond, Old Overholt, that was 8 years old back then. And, yeah, so it's funny.
From Pennsylvania still.
Yeah.
Well, I just had it explained to me that it's just a noticeable difference from the catalytic, like, enzymes that everyone's throwing in rather than fermenting the old way. But it leaves a thin product, so rise like Sazerac 6 year, which... The cocktail community has had varying opinions on at one point or another. You know, I mean, they're going to slowly begin to move in and take over. It'll be interesting to see how Rittenhouse, Bottle and Bond does down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's an ever-changing thing. Just like even when we talk about the certain specs that we use for cocktails, it's to have consistency is one thing, but as long as a human bartender is making that drink, it's never going to be perfectly consistent. You know, like some one person's bar spoon is going to be different than the other person's bar spoon, you know, even how heavy they pour into that bar spoon. You know, like if consistency were really like as big of an issue as we kind of romanticize that it is, then bartenders might be obsolete, you know.
We'd be ripping our hair out, precisely. Well, it's like baristas dialing in, too, you know. The weather is different. The ambient pressure is different. It's sunny. Like, you know, how a drink tastes, no matter if you make it the same way on a great day that's 50 degrees versus a day that's 80 degrees, is going to be completely different.
Sure. Well, you know what? We're about halfway through the show, so let's take a quick break. And then when we get back, we'll be speaking more with Nick Jarrett down in sunny New Orleans, Louisiana. Back in just a moment. Back, Jackson's shaking his head at me. I'm kind of happy.
I'm loving it, man.
Kind of happy and sad you had me bring the guitar out on the show today.
Loving it. I also remember that Bottled and Bond overhaul pretty well.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that was
the photo from the show that day was
sure
actually
was.
Nick and I holding that bottle, looking very happy.
It's a sexy bottle,
it
without
is.
A doubt.
We'll have to do that again. Yeah, absolutely. I imagine that'll be happening when we're down in New Orleans this summer, too.
Without a doubt.
Are you going to be participating in any of the seminars at Tales of the Cocktail this year?
I'm not actively leading any of them, but as always, in one form or another, I'll probably be involved in the Back of House CAP program.
Oh, yeah.
5 years in running now, facilitating that conference. And, you know, it's beginning to kick into gear. Like, channels are going. Yourself, you doing something down there this year?
I'm doing a couple events, a gin and tonic event with Greenhook Gin Smith. You know, just a few things here and there. I don't want to get too tied down. You know,
no, of course.
It's definitely, it's definitely like a week of like bartender fun time. So I don't want to be working too much while doing that. This year, though,
amazing how big it's gotten at this point.
Yeah, this is the 11th. This one goes to 11, right?
This one goes to 11.
So, this year I definitely will have a better tutorial with Jack about the audio equipment. Last year, I came back with about 2 good minutes of usable audio. But
nice. That's right. You were trying to conduct interviews on the fly. Well, we'll make it happen.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe we can get Jack down there. Maybe we can get, you know, some.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
That would be the ideal setup. I could just, like, interview people and he can run the audio. That's the ideal setup. That's what we do right now.
Yeah.
it's definitely starting to begin to kick up, and all the planning is beginning to come into play. I mean, it's such a massive event that it really do take like 6 months to get the whole thing going.
Yeah, and it's funny.
But,
they've also been expanding. You know, there's one in like Canada
Huge.
Now. There's one in Buenos Aires this year. That's insane. I mean, it's... You know, not to mention, like, you know, the Portland Cocktail Week, and this year there was the Hawaii Cocktail Week, and, you know, San Antonio. Like, it's really cool the way that...
Cocktail Classic, the Bourbon Classic in a week.
Yeah, and then, like, Camp Run Amok, all these, like, really cool things that are popping up now. Where it used to be, like, you know, when you were shopping for records, you'd have to, like, get on some like weird like punk rock forum to like find that rare like 7-inch. But now it's like, oh wait, we have one of those in my town. It's great. It's a good time to be alive.
You know, that's some of the stuff that I've been discussing down here, and is one of the reasons why I work in the dive bars as well as the cocktail bars. You know, I mean, when you think about where cocktail-driven bartending has come from the past 5-6 years, and I'm sitting in the bar looking at the back bar, sure, we pretty much have everything we want.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think that a few years ago, Swedish Punch wasn't available, Allspice Dram wasn't available, Creme de Violette wasn't available, your vermouth selection was minimal, you couldn't get a good kill, like Kumo on the contrary.
Right.
You know, we have all this going on now. We have so much ability to exchange information as bartenders and people in the bar community. Now it's about building the better bartender and building the better customer.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
And also,
it's interesting.
I think it's interesting, you know, I know quite a few of, a bunch of our mutual friends have recently, you know, they're still working in cocktail bars, but they'll take like a shift or two at some place. It's a little bit more rock and roll and dive. And that's actually really, to me, a really good thing, because sometimes when I do like a guest bartending spot somewhere and, you know, it's a heavily promoted night. I mean, like Aaron Polsky and I did Cripple Creek in December.
Yeah, dude.
And I
kind of, right?
Yeah, it was pretty gnarly.
Amazing.
And awesome. I'd kind of forgotten what it was like to be like slammed with that kind of environment, you know? So it kind of like gets your speed chops back up by working in those environments. Plus, it's just a lot of fun. Get to wear t-shirts.
It does. It's also a good opportunity to meet like customers and clientele who maybe don't necessarily go to cocktail bars or are a bit younger than the cocktail bar demographic.
Yeah, and you know, that's like...
Instill some good drinking habits and then pull them out to your next bar at some point. They're going to want a cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good way to keep your foot on both sides of the street.
Yeah.
And yes, it definitely will keep your speed up.
Yeah. and it'll slow you down the next morning. But the, it's kind of go back to what you said about building a better bartender and building a better customer,
mm-hmm.
you know, turning people on to these things that they haven't really been exposed to. You know, I find things, you know, places like Mission Chinese too. You go there and it's a rock and roll environment, but there's like fantastic food and, you know, they're playing like Thin Lizzy, you know, and you go into the bathroom and it's like Twin Peaks themed, you know, but you're getting
Twin
this
Peaks,
rad food.
Amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of bringing you know, those two different crowds together that might not venture to the other side. And that's, you know,
yeah,
that's...
which is, you know, I mean, that's what it's about. We've had specialty cocktail bars. You know me, I'm 100% for bringing what we do across genres.
Mm-hmm.
Like in this day and age, you know, you don't have to be specialty. Like, we do at the same. Started by Katie Darling when she was bartending there. They do a fine diving Thursday. The classic cocktail night there. I get to minister over Tiki-Oki Tuesdays on Tuesday nights. Mix some karaoke and dive bar tiki drinks.
That's awesome.
And, you know, you can go out and get a 1934 Zombie Punch at the same for much less than you'd be paying for anywhere else, or a full-on Scorpion Bowl.
Yeah.
In a dive bar filled with smoke while singing karaoke. And that's a pretty wonderful thing, I think.
That's something that, you know, people, the bar filled with smoke thing, some people are really happy about. I remember when the smoking ban went into effect when I was bartending in Oklahoma, and it just started right as I started bartending. And I remember being kind of bummed out going into bars because I do smoke. But then, like, when I was working, I was like, this is kind of awesome that, like, we can't smoke in
it's
here
got
anymore.
It's got its ups and its downs. As I was saying, yeah. It's a rock and roll bar. The laws and the lax laws down here make that partially one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, dealing in, of course, plastic cups. I bartend in plastic there every Friday, Saturday.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's very completely different. Shaking on Cajun crystal is someone at Circle Box. When you take a small plastic go cup and a large go cup and use them as shakers.
I love that, man. I've definitely done it before. I like using the to-go coffee cups, like the large and the small, the one for like the cappuccino and the one for the latte, putting those together, shaking like a coffee drink with that, then using the coffee lid with the little spout as my strainer.
There we go.
It's the Boston coffee shaker. Yeah, you know what? Actually, speaking of Boston, we have Sunday coming up. Is St. Patrick's Day, as I'm sure you know and are probably preparing for.
Absolutely. Well, I'll actually tell you a little bit about St. Patrick's Day traditions in New Orleans, which is kind of funny. Like I said earlier, there is that Italian-Irish like tradition, same as like in Boston or in Philadelphia or New York. So they love any occasion to party down here, and they do it very well. The parade involves throwing out cabbage and potatoes and carrots from floats as they go by that people are supposed to make soup with later on. All the houses will be open. St. Patrick's Day is another one of those traditions. This is one of the few days of the year that throughout America, day drinking is more or less tolerated.
Yeah.
In New Orleans, it's always tolerated. So it'll be very interesting to see how the St. Patrick's Day goes down here.
This will be your first one there, right?
First one down here. God knows I always had fun in Brooklyn on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I luckily I have to work that night, and I'm pretty stoked about that. You know, keep me reined in a little bit throughout the day, not completely, but a little bit. I mean, you know.
Gotta
celebrate a heritage I have nothing to do with. Yeah, I mean, I imagine I'll probably call you that day, that afternoon, and make sure we get a nice Guinness toast.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we'll hold off on the Irish whiskey, or maybe we'll do that later on at night.
Well, I'm shooting for later on at night, actually.
Later on.
We'll save that one.
Yeah, it should be great. I'm not working as it is on a Sunday this year. And you'll be working at Prime Meats, right?
Yep. I'll be on the same block as PJ Hanley's, which... actually,
oh, good Lord, you're right.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty wild. They always have the Guinness bust.
It's not your first rodeo. You've done this one or twice before.
I've done it. I'm not proud of it, but I've done it. but yeah, definitely get some green foamed Guinness in my system.
Always.
So actually, one thing I want to talk about too. Just because we kind of hit on Mission Chinese and like we hit on food for a second. One thing I really like about Cure is that you guys have a rad kitchen and really good food there. And that's one thing that I find doesn't always happen with like cocktail dens. And, you know, it's a very spacious place with a huge patio, but you guys have rockin' food. And that's, I think, really important when you're slamming, you know, 4 or 5 Sazeracs in the afternoon.
Oh, absolutely. You should be, you know, eating something while you're drinking. We all know this.
That's what garnishes
cool
are for,
program,
right?
Too, because it's sort of an open kitchen. And the cooks who are preparing food actually do service to the 6 bar seats right in front of the kitchen. So it's a nice little back and forth, too. The people who work in the kitchen get a really good handle on cocktails and become very familiar with the menu. And we work very closely, very intimately with them. Which, you know, Dram, of course, in Brooklyn also had the same sort of open kitchen mentality.
And they just got a new chef.
I love working with the cooks and the chefs behind the bar, back and forth. It just makes for a good, you know, repartee.
Yeah, there's always something that you can teach each other to really like nail a dish or a cocktail. Some ingredient that you've never heard of.
Someone has a question about the food, you just bring the cook right over to them. Someone has a question about the drink, bring the bartender over.
Absolutely.
You know, the expert is just playing telephone between the front of house, back of house.
Yeah. Awesome. Are you going to be coming back to New York anytime before the summer?
I'm not sure. It'll probably be early summer, maybe late May. But when I'm up there, I'll definitely give you a shout. And you know me, I'm probably going to end up pulling my usual set of guest chefs.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you do, let me know, and we'll definitely let our listeners and everyone who tunes into Heritage Radio check it out so they can come out and see you and have some of your awesome drinks. And also, we got to get those tattoos together. Yeah. Maybe that'll happen.
Has Heritage Radio ever had a tattoo artist work in the studio before?
I don't know, but that's the next show.
Book it.
I mean, you got to break it in, right, dude?
That's true. Nick, man, it's been so good catching up with you. And I hope to see you.
It's always a pleasure. Josh, you too.
Yeah, I hope to see you in New York, if not, you know, if we can before New Orleans, but I'll definitely be seeing you down there this summer.
Book an extra day or two.
All right. I'm crashing on your floor.
Done. All right. I'll talk to you later, David.
All right.
You guys have a great day.
Thanks a lot. You've been listening to Nick Jarrett on The Speakeasy, good buddy of mine. If you're down in New Orleans, go check him out at Cure and The Saint. For Heritage Radio, this is Damon Bolte. Tune in next week. We'll have Giuseppe Gonzalez. Oh, it's going to be a real crazy show.
Nice.
All right. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.